Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's a nice day. It's going to be nicer as the days go on. Fast approaching is the Feast of Tabernacles and the other fall holy days. And some of us may be a little anxious. We get kind of that way this time of year to pack up and get out of here. Some of us are planning. Some of us, this will be their first Feast of Tabernacles and the first holy day season that they have enjoyed. It's a joyous time. And many use this time, especially during the Feast of Tabernacles, to give gifts. To give gifts to children and to others. And in fact, right now there are some in our congregation that are gathering up gifts to take to Guatemala and the Philippines. And this is a thoughtful and loving consideration to share these types of gifts, even though they're physical and they get old and they wear out or they get lost or whatever. What is the greatest gift we can give? What is the greatest gift we can give? Is it perhaps taking someone out to a meal? Or perhaps buying someone new clothes, or maybe giving them some hard cash to do what they want. Well, I'd like to share with you a little story here that I found as I was rummaging around in my notes. This lady writes in this article, "When I turned 40, my husband staged a surprise party for me. I'll never forget my emotion as I entered the restaurant and saw loving friends amid flowers and music and a large display of photographs that spanned my life. I hurried from one table to the next, greeting each guest. Then suddenly, at the rear of the room, I spotted a gentle, smiling man with snow-white hair and a vibrant blue-eyed woman on his arm. Mom, Dad, I gasped, they had flown to Los Angeles from Chicago just hours before. I burst into tears at the sight of these two who, more than anyone else, had taught me that being there for another person is the greatest gift we can give. The author says that being there is the greatest gift we can give. The fruit of one trait is the key that I want to explore today. What is this one key that we should look for? As a kid, you've heard it all the time, especially in school. Pay attention. Or in other words, attentiveness. See, the failures of attentiveness are being distracted when someone else is talking to us. The failure is sitting there or standing there listening to somebody while you're thinking about what you're going to say when it's your turn, or perhaps thinking about your to-do list. I mean, mine's long. Or perhaps allowing interruptions, or whatever the case is. Let's take a look at an example of Jesus Christ. If you would, turn over to Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8. Starting in verse 26, and we're not going to read the whole section, but in Luke 8, starting in verse 26, this is where Jesus went and sailed to the country of the Gadarenes, opposite of Galilee. And when he stepped on land, there met him a certain man from the city who had demons for a long time. Now, we know the story. Jesus asked who he was, and he said, "We are legion." He had 1,000 demons in him. That's how many were in a legion, a Roman legion. So Christ cast out the demons into a herd of swine. And let's look at verse 34. Verse 34. When those who fed the swine saw what had happened, they fled and told it in the city and in the country. or as they ran away, they were frightened, the herdsmen of the swine. Now, what happened after that? There's a large gap. I mean, the city wasn't just over the hill. We're talking about these guys running into the city and into the countryside, telling what they had seen. Here, this whole herd of swine, who knows how many, let's assume that it was 1,000. Here they all rush down and are drowned. What happens? Verse 35. Then they went out to see what had happened. The city, the countryside came to Jesus and found the man whom the demons had departed, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. That's the townspeople, the country people. They were afraid. See, Jesus was paying attention to the man whom he had just healed. But they, the people, were afraid. The guy that was healed was not afraid. He was sitting at Jesus' feet. Let's look on here into verses 43 through 48. Here Jesus was asked to go to this one person's house, Jairus, to heal his daughter, because his daughter was very, very sick. And so Jesus and his entourage, you know, it could be this whole section of people or both sections of people, here they are traipsing off to Jairus' home. Everybody's talking, and you know how it sounds like around here. You can imagine what it would be like walking down a dusty road, everybody gabbing and talking, people asking Jesus questions, and so forth. But this one woman who had been sick for 12 years thought, maybe he could heal me. She reached out and touched the hem of his robe. And Jesus knew it. I mean, here he is amongst a crowd, and he knew it. It says that power drained out of him. But anyway, whatever it was. You know, he could have dismissed it, but he stopped, he turned, and he paid attention. In verse 45, it says, and Jesus said, "Who touched me?" When all denied it, Peter and those with him said, "Master, the multitudes and throng press you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" See, Jesus turned around and paid attention to this lady who was sick and who was just healed. When we are attentive to others, there are three things that happen. One, we notice those people that are nearby. We notice their needs and their desires. In the story that we started out with a lady and her birthday party, her husband saw her desire to see her father and her mother. He saw it, he addressed it, he arranged for it to happen. He was paying attention to his wife. Jesus, we've seen two examples, the man that was healed, the woman that was healed, on the way to Jairus' home. Now, he could have passed it off, just like this. You know, his disciples said, "Hey, we're in a crowd, and you're saying, 'Who touched me?'" But he noticed. Another example, since we're in Luke, let's turn over to Luke 13. Luke 13, verses 10 through 17, we're just going to touch on a couple of things here. Starting in verse 10, he says, "Now he," Jesus, "was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath." Now, you can imagine a synagogue, small rural church, in effect, crowded because Jesus had a following. People flocked to him. So imagine 3 or 4 times as many people in that little synagogue as may be in here. You can imagine how crowded it'd be. There would be standing room only. Standing room only. And here he is teaching. And behold, verse 11, "There was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity 18 years and was bent over and could in no way raise herself up. But when Jesus saw her," he saw her need. "He said to her, 'Woman, you are loosed from your infirmity.' He saw her need. Here are hundreds of people around him, him teaching, being busy in the synagogue, and what happens? Woman, you're loosed from your infirmity. And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God. The second thing that happens is it confers value to the other person. It confers value to the other person. To turn back to my original story, I'd like to read three other short paragraphs. A year later, my husband and I were invited to an unusual wedding. Our friends had been married years before in a civil ceremony, and they now wanted to reaffirm their commitment to one another in a church service. The morning before the wedding, I decided to call my friend and beg off. "Kathy, this is Karen," I began tentatively. "You're coming, aren't you?" she broke in. Her voice was urgent. I hesitated, and in that instant recalled the sight of my parents at my 40th birthday party. "Yes, of course," I said, "we'll be there." She conferred value to her friend, who she was just going to write off. And she said, "No, you're worth it. I'm going to come." Why? Because she was worth her parents' and her husband's efforts. How about the guy running around in the tombs, the fellow that was healed? Consider his circumstance. Now, who knows how long he had had these legion of demons, but you can imagine he was scorned by the people. He was abandoned. People avoided him. He was despised. No doubt people feared him, because demons act quite weird sometimes. He was hated. I mean, look where he was living, in the tombs among the dead. But Jesus healed him and sat down with him, giving him value. In verse 39, what happens with the man after Jesus sits down and talks to him and the crowd says, "Hey, go away from us. We don't want you here." What happens to this man that was healed? Scripture says, "So he went away proclaiming throughout the whole city what great things Jesus had done for him." The third thing that attentiveness provides is a time to love. See, time in our society especially is a very precious commodity. All of us have our little clocks on our wrist and our little schedule books and calendars and whatever the case is, so that we can run around getting everything or trying to get everything done that we've got to do. Time is precious. But we, you and I, have to live not by the clock, not by the schedule book, though they help, but we have to live by God's standards. God sets our standards. And he says this about one thing that's important to him in Malachi 3. He says that his people talk to one another. Talk to one another. And he writes it down in his book, and he'll remember the people when he makes up his crown jewels. Paul writes in Philippians 2, "Don't just look out for our own interests, but for the interests of others." And also in Romans 12, he says, "Be devoted to one another in brotherly love, giving preference to one another in honor." This singular trait of attentiveness spawns other traits and other gifts that we can share, and we should share. The gift of listening to someone else, the gift of giving and receiving counsel, the gift of showing affection, the gift of cheerfulness, either our being perked up or helping someone else be perked up, and compassion, acceptance, and love, which we've already discussed. Just being there. you see these gifts rather than the clothes, rather than the money, rather than this and that. These gifts never get old. They never wear out. They are never out of date. Be sure to make this feast season one of joyful gift giving and sharing.